everyone. Welcome back to a new age. An age of reason and limitless possibility, endless good news, and Cinnabon flavored ice cream in stock at Ben & Jerry's stores. I am assured by my audience, I haven't been able to find it yet. Feel like I'm being trolled by the people who profess to like me. But you know what? Things are looking up. Looking like it's gonna be a pretty fantastic week. How's it going, Francesca Fiorentini?
Ooh, hail Biden. Yes.
Yay.
Pure vodka.
This is exactly what I was dreaming would happen a year and a half ago. Yay, but it's good. It's good. It's good.
You know, obviously
it's not ideal, but
Biden clearly out the gate was the strongest candidate in the primaries. We knew we were going to be here.
I predicted he'd do terribly, and I was wrong. I mean, he lost. Anyway, we're getting derailed. We got 4 years of exactly that waiting for us. So just the fight is getting ready. But no, it is good news. And you know, we had the formal call over the weekend. I did a live stream. You've had a full show. So we've been able to respond to that a little bit. Now we face the lame duck session. And so through the course of today's episode, we're gonna be talking about Donald Trump's legal strategy, such as it is. We're going to be talking about some of what his followers have, how they've responded to the call that happened over the weekend. We've got a little bit of good news coming out of President-elect Joe Biden. That's, I think, the first time I've actually said that in a video. So that's interesting. And a lot more besides. And in fact, we're going to be closing, because we do have to worry about these next 60 days or so, and my mic stand is not gonna get level. To close out this episode, Francesca and I are gonna be doing another top 10 list, the top 10 scary Trump lame duck actions. We're gonna try to get out in front of some of the worst things that he could try to do during his last couple months as president. Wait, I'm seeing breaking news. Did this actually happen, or am I further being trolled by the audience? I'm gonna, Trump has fired Defense Secretary Esper. Okay, well, that's gonna tie into one of mine that I'm gonna talk about later. Esper said like 5 days ago he was gonna resign. And so Trump pulled the classic alpha move. No, I fire you. It was me, I chose. I fire you, you don't quit. What a little baby. Anyway, okay, so we're gonna try to get a little bit more information from that. Maybe one of my producers in the doc can put a little bit more. Hold on really fast. So Jim Acosta tweets, Trump has fired the Secretary of Defense, and Ilhan Omar quote retweets, they're all getting replaced soon. So
stay dunking.
Trump tweets, I am pleased to announce. Oh my God. Anyway, okay, well, we can't respond too much more to that right now because we just don't have the information. Mark Esper has been terminated. I would like to thank him for his service. Well, you'd like to thank him, but you just said he was terminated, so.
This could tie into one of our fears, but it is just a little bit of a like, no, don't clean, no one leave. I haven't conceded yet. We're still in this. And it's like, no, homie, people are gonna be leaving. Mm-hmm. They're looking for their next job already. And I hope they don't get hired.
Yeah, I hope they don't get hired, but unfortunately, all of them will soon be doing panels with Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper. Anyway, so we're going to get started with our news. Everybody who's already watching, please hit the like button, share the stream, do all that stuff that you basically please the algorithm. We have to be as nice to the algorithm as Trump voters are demanding we now be to them. And I don't understand either part of that, but do that, please. And then as you comment along and super chat and tweet and Twitch and all that, we'll be responding. With that said, there's a lot to get to. So why don't we jump right into it? We knew entering the weekend that Donald Trump planned to contest this thing, and he was gonna be rolling out evidence that he believes show that the election was stolen or rigged or whatever. And so early Saturday, we found out that they were going to have a press conference, and Trump tweeted, lawyers press conference at Four Seasons, Philadelphia. But it quickly turned out that that wasn't quite right. It was technically the Four Seasons, but the actual Four Seasons had a problem with that tweet. They said, to clarify, President Trump's press conference will not be held at Four Seasons Hotel Philadelphia. It'll be held at a place that has no relation with the hotel. And Trump eventually did fix it, tweeting out, big press conference today in Philadelphia at Four Seasons Total Landscaping, which immediately tells you that something's wrong, because that doesn't sound like a hotel really at all. And it turned out there were a few differences between it and the actual Four Seasons. First of all, as you can see from this map, not even really in the same place. One's kind of in the core of Philly and another is in another place altogether. Other differences include the fact that the one that they had their press conference at was right next to an adult bookstore called Fantasy Island. And right nearby, there were X-rated videos that you could purchase or rent to bring home, but they also have viewing booths. So that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, Giuliani had to have an afternoon.
Hey, that was not, he was not in a viewing booth. He was in a shirt tucking in booth.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then they actually do the press conference. And when you just look at the video, it looked pretty good. And we're gonna show you some of the video. It looks like any other sort of thing with Rudy Giuliani and a podium and a backdrop. But then once you zoom out a little bit, it looks kind of like this. And you realize that something has gone horribly astray. Because that looks like a place where you get robbed at knife point, not at a place where you do a presidential press conference. I'm pretty sure I've bought weed there, actually. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Was that okay, Fantasy Island? Yeah, definitely. Definitely bought weed.
Exactly. Well, you know, you want something, you're gonna relax with the weed and then you wanna watch a video, I guess. Okay, so we're gonna get into a little bit of what was actually revealed there. But as you were watching the Four Seasons total landscaping thing proceed, what were you thinking, Francesca?
So many hypotheses just swirling in my head about how the F this happened. Like it makes no sense and all the options are funny, okay? So the best option, the most sort of like the most kind option, the most sympathetic to the Trump campaign is that they meant to hold the press conference at this place. In which case we saw the photo, like really, bruh? Like, is this a campaign trail? I'm trying to rub elbows with the working man type, you know, situation.
I mean, it can't be that, right?
This is not I'm going to contest the results of this election. We're still in this fight. We still are in command, right? Like this is a campaign stop the Trump administration would never even do to begin with. Visit kind of a podunk landscaping company out of the goodness of your concern for the working man. No, that is not. So, but that's what they say. They maintain that that's what they meant to do. They wanted to be in a more favorable area instead of in the heart of Philadelphia. But the other two options that I love is that one, Trump, obviously someone in the Trump campaign wanted to book the Four Seasons, Google the Four Seasons, and you know what happens? That SEO search, someone been doing their job at the landscaping company, SEO search was above Four Seasons Hotel. And they called the Four Seasons Landscaping Company and they booked it and the person did not have the heart to tell them or didn't tell them, wanted to clown on them themselves. And wait, let me just say the last thing is maybe Trump just tweeted that and then his team was like, oh, we gotta book the Four Seasons now to make that reality true so they couldn't show that the president's tweet was false. You know what I'm saying?
I get it. I don't think that they intentionally did it. Like the fact that it has Four Seasons in the name, that means definitely somebody was hoodwinked. We can debate who did the hoodwinking and how it went about, but it definitely wasn't intentional. And the thing is, that isn't a place that you do press conferences, clearly. That is a landscaping company. It's not like, okay, sure, we had Rudy Giuliani this week. Last week we had the Rotary Club. No, you didn't have the Rotary Club last week. You've never had a press conference before, I'm fairly certain. Which means that either they were so locked into it, so sure that they were right, that they offered a ton of money to a company that doesn't even do press conferences to let them do one, or that a person at the place was like, oh, this is Rudy Giuliani? Yeah, no, we can accommodate that. We got a spot for you. And that's what I assume it has to be. It has to have been that they trolled them. Yeah, I don't understand. None of it makes any sense.
No, this
could be more on the nose. What's that?
I was just gonna say, no source is gonna come clean about what actually happened. The New York Times is reporting, according to their source, they meant to. No. You think anyone is gonna admit the mistake?
Yeah. Well, supposedly, I saw someone in the Twitch chat said that the owner of the Fantasy Island said that they had to take their phone off the hook because people kept calling to see if Rudy Giuliani was there. What we do know is that they did have what passes for a press conference in the Trump administration. And it started off on kind of shaky ground. The first person that Rudy Giuliani, the attorney for President Donald Trump, called up as a witness to base allegations of vote counting shenanigans in Philadelphia turned out to have been a sex offender who for years has been a perennial candidate in New Jersey. I read had exposed himself to some children. So you'd assume that the Q people would have an issue with that, that they're having as their secret witness. Oh, it turns out we did some digging. We looked for the evidence and it turns out a pedophile. Like, imagine if Joe Biden had done that. Can you imagine? But no, it's Rudy Giuliani, so it's totally fine. Don't even worry about it. And so they got rid of him. And then it turned out that Rudy Giuliani had to actually find out about the call sort of in real time. So let's go to that video.
The poll? Because they don't decide the election. The call for Joe Biden isn't, is it? Who was it called by? All the, oh my goodness, all the networks. Wow. All the networks. We have to forget about the law. Judges don't count. All the networks thought Biden was going to win by 10%. Gee, what happened? Come on, don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Okay, so look, it's not that, look, he's technically right, of course. The call doesn't mean anything legally, but it represents that tons of people, arguably with a better grasp on reality than Rudy Giuliani, think that this thing is over. And I would argue that they're probably right. And he says that it doesn't mean that judges don't matter. Yeah, but the judges have no interest in you either, Rudy. Just this morning, one of their court like challenges or whatever was at least temporarily thrown out because of a long list of documents they hadn't provided that they were supposed to. They have thousands of lawyers and they can't even get their paperwork in order. So yeah, the media calling it doesn't mean that this thing is over, but this thing is definitely over and the media has grasped that faster than Rudy.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many media outlets were rushing to call a bunch of different states. And then when they realized they had to pump the brakes and they were very sad for 3 days. So like there's part of me on Tuesday night, I was like with Giuliani, I was like, what are you doing? Slow down, why? Can't we just wait? But now that we're talking 97-98% reporting, it's done, you know what I mean? Yeah. And trust me, they would have called it as soon as they possibly could if they wanted to. But instead they got 4 days of news out of it. What I will say is, y'all, the compromat that Trump must have on Giuliani, that shirt tuck ain't nothing. That shirt tuck is, I mean, if you can be so easily duped into that Borat scene, how much else is there? Why is Giuliani still there? Why? And also, when will he be just jowls?
he's more and more jowls by the day. I will give you that. Yeah,
I was just like, tucking my jowls.
We've seen what Borat did to him. I think Trump paid Ashton Kutcher to get some information on him. Yeah, anyway. It's just, it's ridiculous. And the thing is, like, people watch that press conference as they will continue to watch the various, you know, shenanigans that the Trump administration puts on, because in theory, they could present some actual evidence, something rising to the level of more than like a 4chan rumor, perhaps. But they didn't. That was one of their perhaps last opportunities to get a handle on the narrative, and it was wasted. And so instead of providing some actual evidence of some sort of manipulation of the vote totals or something that gives evidence to their claims of voter fraud, instead, people are gonna look back on these last days of the Trump administration and they are going to remember the Four Seasons total landscaping. A lot of people have gotten in on the fun. By the afternoon on Saturday, Yelp had to slap the business's page with an unusual activity alert and temporarily disable comments because the comments did not reflect actual consumer experiences. They tended to be things more like this. A comment from Madison Frobisher said, when I was losing an election back in 2004, I knew exactly where to turn for a desperate last minute press conference. Four Seasons Total Landscaping has the best combination of gardening and Pennsylvanian electoral law litigation services. I didn't win the election, but I sure had a great press conference.
Oh my God.
That's great.
You have to show this because I did look into buying a t-shirt from the Four Seasons landscaping company. And I did see, and I cursorily read it. And I was like, what side are they on? Are they like, you think they like him? You think they don't like him? And then I saw a slogan that I misread, but now I've read it completely and I love it and I will buy a shirt. Can you please show that?
Make America rake again, lawn and order. Is that the one?
Yes. I saw Law and Order and I was just like, oh, it's Law and Order. Gross. Ew. But no. They're just dunking on him like we all are.
Yeah. No, this was huge. How huge is this? This is gonna be a medium cut for YouTube. But a friend of mine who's a big YouTuber, Natalie Tran, she used to do all these like funny videos and everything. It's been years since she's done a video, and everybody like just wants her to make more videos, but she has a whole other career and all that. She's got a million things to do. She made a short little video as the receptionist at the Four Seasons Total Landscaping getting the call. And it's just, you can't, this is too crazy. Like the next step is for them to act to do the press conference on a recreation of the Titanic's deck. That's the only thing that would be more on the nose as a metaphor. And so you see things going around like this, that next week Rudy Giuliani is gonna have his press conference at the Ritz. I look forward to that one.
I was thinking we could do, you know, there's gotta be a weed shop called like the Hyatt Regency, you know, and that will be booked. And I'm excited for the day. Again, this is all ending like a Simpsons episode, and there's nothing more perfect than that. It's pitchforks outside, count the vote. No, don't count the vote. It's a random press conference in a dark alley, and it's all the people who are now going to be stealing as much as they can from the White House on their way out.
100%, and that'll probably come up in our top 10 list. But yeah, that press conference. I mean, you've probably seen a few of like Jacob Wall's press conferences, right? That he did on like his front stoop. Like that was a nicer backdrop for a press conference than the president's.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Axios had another scoop over the weekend. A little bit of information about what Donald Trump is going to be doing over the next few weeks to try to get this whole situation back under his control. He plans to brandish obituaries of people who supposedly voted but are dead, plus hold campaign-style rallies in an effort to prolong his fight against apparent insurmountable election results. This is according to four different Trump advisors that say the dead people voted thing is going to be a big thing. And look, I can imagine that because you remember in his thing with Jonathan Swan, that interview, he loves having papers now. He's a big fan. He doesn't totally know how to read or interpret a visual data, but he likes the idea of papers that prove him right. So expect that he's going to continue the super spreader tour, but this time he's going to be waving around pictures of dead people that he will assert have apparently voted.
Yeah, he doesn't really understand staples yet, but they're working on that. He doesn't know if it goes like backwards. Like, which corner does the staple go in? You know, it's very difficult if you don't actually know how to read. Oh my God, John, more like of all the things. And like, look, I don't, maybe this is probably, we will talk about this later. It's like the least harmful thing he could do, but to have more campaign rallies in the dead of winter, flu season's upon us. I'm wearing a sweater.
I wish I was. It's freezing in here. Yeah, it's going to be devastating, but his fans need it now more than ever. They're going to need to be like surround him and chant that he won and everything. They want to, like, their supply of heroin was just cut off. They only have a little bit left, and so they need to make it last through the winter. And so I think Trump rallies,
snort him,
going to help.
No,
I mean, chop him up and snort him.
But this is the thing. It's like, I mean, if we thought that he was inciting violence on the campaign trail in office, what is lame duck Trump going to incite at those campaign rallies? That's not even one of my five.
Yeah, well, we'll see if it's mine. You have to wait until the end of the show. But we do have a little bit more information from Axios. They quote a person that they identified as someone who often talks to Trump as saying, so not Melania then, as saying there is no chance the president will call for national, not Don Jr. either. No chance he'll call for national unity, obviously. Do you need a source on that? Honestly, Axios, you need, like, we've got to double check this. Because he might call for unity. He might rise above himself and prove in this last moment to be the president we always knew he could be. No, he's not going to do it. But anyway, they also cite a senior Republican who frequently speaks to the president, stating that he is angry, volatile, disconsolate. Yes, again, he's like that post-coitus. I'm pretty sure he's like that now. I have a feeling he's probably disconsolate. Anyway, you want an example, Francesca? Not of the thing I just said, but of how angry he is.
Bro.
The federal... Hey, you've done the undies thing, so I gotta get you back.
I mean,
the
federal coitus, meaning the last time he did coitus, which was what, like, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, whenever Stormy Daniels happened, or maybe more. That's definitely the last time. That's what it's called, by the way, anyway. Doing coitus. Coiting, I believe.
I totally coited. That dude coits. Anyway, the Federal Government General Services Administration has declined to provide funding to the Biden campaign's transition team as President Donald Trump contests the results of the 2020 election. So there's something like between $9 and $10 million that's supposed to go to the transition team to pay for administrative costs and offices and all that. Seems like a crazy amount of money, but apparently that's what they need. They're not giving it to them, but of course they're not. That would be an acknowledgement that a transition is happening, and they don't want that. So I guess they're going to try to stop it. And
that's
what's interesting
that
is,
like, a deep clean would cost the White House at this point. $10 million is minimum for a deep clean of the White House. It's a petri dish. There is so much Rona in that place.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't usually live on surfaces, but it definitely lives on that surface.
Yeah.
Imagine the dust bunnies. There's like the orange dust bunnies everywhere.
Yeah. No, you gotta get someone to sweep out the Big Mac wrappers and everything. Like, there's orange stains and everything. Like, it is going to be a mess, and so we need that
like
money.
Tumbleweeds through the halls. Like, at this point,
exactly. It's almost beautiful, haunting in a way. So who is leading to this? We're learning a little bit more as time goes on about who is trying to get Trump to accept reality and who is trying to get him to double down. Some of those double down people are obvious. You've seen Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz saying he needs to continue to fight. Laura Ingraham saying he's still the leader of the GOP and he'll probably be president, but even if he isn't, he should run again. So those people are obvious. But then you also have people like Jared Kushner, who apparently has been advising Trump to pursue legal remedies to the election, which again aren't really a thing in the absence of evidence of voter fraud. A second source close to Kushner confirms to Axios that he had not advised Trump to concede. Although, again, on the concede front, you have apparently Melania telling him that he needs to accept that he lost, and clearly he's not listening to his wife. That seems pretty clear. But anyway, so we're getting all of this conflicting information about who's saying to double down, who's not. Mark Meadows is apparently saying double down, don't leave. Yeah, I don't know. It's a mess in there. Another source apparently says that they're having some awkward conversations in the president's orbit, and that basically everyone has themselves accepted that he's lost, but that doesn't mean that they're telling him that he has lost. And Rudy Giuliani, of course, is egging him on for this legal fight, because look, we've been trying to figure out what exactly is going on with Rudy Giuliani, but at the very least, this is his last bit of like influence or people paying attention to him. Like, he is going to hold on to this as long as he can. And so it's going to be interesting to see who wins out and for how long they win out on pushing these ridiculous sham legal challenges. But as of right now, it seems like they're being successful in getting Trump to not accept reality.
I mean, it makes sense. They all have the coronavirus. It's the fever talking. Mark Meadows is loopy, and they're all on whatever experimental drugs they're getting access to. So the idea that they won't accept reality makes even more sense now. Trump knows he's lost. The whole thing is whether he can let on, just like he knows that he knew the pandemic was real, but he didn't want to let on. Are they trying to save the economy? Are they just trying to hawk more shirts before they got a peace out? Look, Cheney is just shaking his damn head. That poor man's non-heart is just, he's getting palpitations with his non-heart. He doesn't have a heart, actually, if you remember that. He is also still alive. Alex Trebek, not. So yeah, no God, there is none. And but no, he like,
I don't like it.
This is the worst way. If you want to steal an election, focus on one state, okay? Flip the voting machines in one of those states, hack one of them, get Russia on the case. Focus on one state. Don't just do a blanket steal. It doesn't work. Ugh, amateur.
It is coming across as very amateurish. I mean, Rudy Giuliani is one of his like senior legal advisors. How is that going to work out for you? Honestly.
But this is the whole thing no one's talking about. Like, if dead people voted, Lindsey Graham is on Fox News. Like, well, 100 people voted here and 6 people over there. And like, that's 106. You know, and Biden is winning by 30,000 votes. So like, what are we talking about? Are there 30,000 people who voted who were dead? I don't think so. Even if we're gonna believe their reality. So
as outsiders, we have to acknowledge what is happening, whether it's Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz, or it's, you know, Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham, or all the right wing grifters on YouTube. They are saying Trump has won, not because they think he has, or that they even think this legal strategy is going to work, because it clearly isn't. They are reassuring their audience, I have your back. You're disconnected from reality. I'm just as disconnected from reality as you are, so keep giving me your sweet, sweet dollars. That's what they want. They are vice signaling to their audience to ensure that they stay relevant. Like Laura Ingraham saw those crowds chanting Fox News sucks in Arizona, and that had to scare her. The idea that her career could go bye-bye when Trump leaves. So she has to, like, he might be plunging below the surface of the ocean, but she is going to cling to him as he goes down there, because that's the only place where her money, you know, will continue to flow. But I want to give you a little bit, just a little bit more behind the scenes information, because it's fun. Don't necessarily take this to the bank. It is coming from the Daily Mail, but it's fun. So I'm going to give them one opportunity at news for us. The tabloid says that Trump will consider Biden a phony president and will boycott his inauguration in January. I personally buy that. despite the fact that Hillary Clinton attended Trump's inauguration 4 years ago, I have a feeling he won't mind the hypocrisy there. But this is where it gets fun. Insiders describe the atmosphere inside the West Wing as manic, exuberant, energized, and toxic, with some staff lighting rose-scented candles in an attempt to soften the environment and to combat the smell of fast food delivered to the president and his inner circle.
Some staff member. You mean Melania?
I don't know. I think she's like,
God,
my love, I must still live here, please. It's too much filet of fish, too much. And so
you just had the Big Mac, but so all these Big Macs, you just had them. I don't understand. I don't know. I don't want a cone. Why am I doing German right now? I forget her accent. God.
I don't know. It's not German, but anyway, they're freaking out. He's vacillating between hiding in the White House and going golfing. And honestly, I don't even mind this. Like when I experience the most minor level of stress, I start eating like a madman. So I get it. If you're facing the end of your political career, possibly your descent into irrelevance, if you want to get a bunch of McDonald's, hell, I get a lot of McDonald's with far less justification than that. So for once,
Don, I'm on your side. Bob Woodward's next book is just gonna be like Supersize Me, where he like tracks the downfall of Donald Trump, but because he's only been eating McDonald's 24/7, you know? It's great. Maybe. And Bob, I think my heart just stopped, Bob. This is it. I'm gonna get one more Egg McMuffin, Bob. No, you tell the world. He's so good.
And it'll come out 2 years after it should have for maximum impact. Anyway, yes. Do we care? Like, do we care about what Trump's been saying? I have it here. Do we want to hear what Trump's been saying?
It is
we
interesting get, like, to hear how scenes. He's been. Yes, it is. I do.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Okay. Then we'll transition to that. We'll be brief because you know it's Trump and he's you know he's the lame duck. Do we really have to pay him that much attention? Anyway. Okay. So we're getting a little bit of information behind the scenes. We know a little bit about what's going on in the White House. We're getting very little directly from Donald Trump. The last we heard directly from him really was on Thursday when he gave one of the most shameful speeches by a president literally in the history of our republic. Since then, it's mostly been Twitter and honestly not even that much on Twitter. Here's a bit of what we have from earlier this weekend. I won this election by a lot. No, you didn't. You didn't. Been called and you
lost. That's not how you should read it. It's just much more like, I won this election by a lot. Like you just have
like,
to.
Like by a lot.
Like no. By a lot, you really have to airhead it up because that's really how what is inside of his brain. It's a valley girl idiot airhead, and that who's just like at brunch, who's like actually he totally was looking at me. It was like John Hamm was at the club or something, and he's like, no, did you see that? He like really he wanted my number, but like you were in the way anyway.
Okay, I'm gonna try it. Okay. As we continue, 71 million legal votes, the most ever for a sitting president. You did leave out a little bit of important context. You lost, and the other guy got millions more. But hey, you know, silver linings for the low D on this very difficult week. So you put the legal votes again, but you know, you lost. So yes, it's the most for a sitting president. That's great. The population has increased, and also turnout was up. But you did lose. You lost by millions of votes. And can we just very briefly touch base with, like, nobody's even talking about the vote lead. Like the Republicans, I'm saying, that are like, no, seriously, like, if we go in to Georgia and we take these votes and we get rid of them, and then we double these votes for Trump, then maybe we can win. Like, they're not even disputing the fact that, you know, the size of the population of a small state is the vote lead that Biden has overall. That's obviously not important. We shouldn't even consider that. And they're saying it's impossible effectively that Biden won, even though Biden is leading overall all over the place. He's got tons of votes. So
yeah, pick a state. Just pick a state to harp on. No, you can't just blanket say this. It looks bad. It all looks bad, but it looks extra bad. My God. Keep going. Yeah. Keep going. Well, read the rest.
We'll just get a little bit more. So this is after the call happened. Since when does the lamestream media call who our next president will be? We have all learned a lot in the last 2 weeks. No, you haven't. Yeah, we haven't learned anything. You're incapable of it, clearly. Constitutionally, emotionally, psychologically, I don't know exactly, spiritually, I don't know, but you can't learn. And the lamestream media does call it again. It's not legally significant, but it happens. And you will note that when the call goes for the Republicans, like you check, it's all on Twitter. You know, take a look at the right wingers. Take a look at what they were saying after it was called for Trump 4 years ago. They thought it was significant then. They thought that the call was very important then. It's just now that it doesn't count for anything. But
it's,
Francesca,
it's so yes, it is.
I was
it
just
is.
Gonna say that's no. You continue. What's up?
Oh, it is just so sad. It's sad to see a president who never wanted to be president, never should have been president, should have always been tweeting in the abyss about Robert Pattinson And here he is, he stays in power and he's the perfect emblem and continues to be the perfect emblem of white fragility. Because although white supremacy and white privilege are real, this is a president who, despite winning his office, has never acted like the president, has never understood his own power and privilege. And the fact that he can't have the decency to concede is also so unpresidential. It's ironic, right? It's like, how are you still unpresidential at this moment? You look, and I don't like Bill Maher, but he has said it time and again, and it's the one thing I agree with him on, which is he is a whiny little bitch. That's all he is. Yeah. Continues to be a whiny bitch time and time and time again. Like, and also, like, since when did the lamestream media call who our president will be? We've all learned a lot in the last couple weeks. Like, since when did the bachelorette, like, I don't know which one, like, since when did the bachelor get to decide, like, who gets a rose and who doesn't? Oh my God, we've all learned a lot in the last few weeks. Like, that's, you know what I mean? It's the unrequited bachelor contestant.
Yeah, I agree with you about Bill Maher. Anyway, I used to like him. Yeah, it's whiny, and you know, if there are any conservative white guys watching this, like, white guys have got a lot of issues. Let's acknowledge that. Do you get, like, conservative liking white guys? Do you get how much damage this is doing to our brand when we really need some good PR these days? Clinging to Trump, it's not helping us, it's making us look worse. And I can't change who I am, so stop dragging me down with you. But anyway, aside from those few tweets, that's really it over the past few days. You know, he tweeted about Esper obviously this morning. The rest of it looks like this, actually. It's just long sections of him retweeting the people saying that he actually won. If it's, you know, Mark Levin, who by the way said that states should just give him the electoral college votes even if the popular vote went against them. So never forget, Mark Levin is aggressively opposed to democracy. Yeah. But this is why they're doing it, because they know that Trump will signal boost them and his fans will like it. Like, imagine if when, like, in the primary, when Bernie no longer had a path to victory, imagine if all of us who like Bernie were just, like, doing hits about how awesome he is and how he's secretly going to win, which is bad enough, and that did kind of happen in 2016. But that Bernie would actually just blanket his Twitter feed with signal boosting people who are like, no, he totally can still do it, he should stay in totally. Like, imagine how sad that would be if Bernie did that. Bernie would never do that, but this sad guy is doing it. And so the entire grift ecosystem is visible. You can see it from mouth to anus. You can see the whole cycle of that.
The whole centipede.
It's happening in real time.
The whole centipede, and it's so true. Like,
the griftipede.
That griftipede, you're so right about the Bernie thing. Like, and how much does it cheapen what they're saying when the president just retweets it as if he needed to retweet it? Like, it just shows you, how much this is a, you know, they're just being hotboxed by their own BS. This is like a Dutch oven of fake authoritarianism. And they're all sitting there just smelling that fascist fart. You know, and hey, we're on the outside, baby. Welcome.
Man, you never know how TDR is gonna go these days. This morning, the president-elect did what president-elects are supposed to do. Indeed, what presidents are supposed to do. Faced the biggest crisis facing our country, the COVID crisis, like a serious leader. And he has announced a COVID task force, a 12-member task force that is going to coordinate the response that we will finally get once Biden is inaugurated. The task force is going to be led by three co-chairs, former Surgeon General Vivek Murphy, former FDA Administration Commissioner David Kessler, and Marcella Nunez-Smith from Yale University. What I found most interesting about the 12-member task force is that they were doctors, and a lot of them have experience dealing with viruses, which is a nice change from the way the task force has been functioning thus far.
But are they elegant? Do they have nice scarves? Do they swap out those scarves every press conference? Because I don't like when she wears the same scarf. Don't like when she wears the same scarf.
Sorry. They're not from Central Casting. You know what, where they are from? Medical school. So I prefer that personally. Now, a lot of people have said, why isn't Fauci on this? But Fauci doesn't need to be on this. Fauci is already a federal employee. These are people who are gonna be coordinating for the transition to get him ready. So these are people who are not current federal employees who are gonna be on this. So Fauci, by the very nature of the commission, cannot be on it. But I have a feeling that whether Fauci is fired or not, he's going to be involved in Biden's administration when it comes to this thing, if I had to guess.
Yeah. I'm like, honestly, when I heard this, my shoulders just dropped a few inches, just like, oh, thank God. We are, again, heading into a dark and bitter winter. That is going to be, no matter what Trump does, the story of the next few months. And we're all staring down more time indoors, more time with the same people we've been with this entire time, driving one another slowly crazy and wondering why we had children. and so it's like, and of course, you know, putting ourselves at risk and essential workers and people who have to still be out there delivering food, driving buses, you know, all the working in hospitals. I mean, so. Yeah. It is a huge acknowledgement of the moment, the reality that we're in. It's an acknowledgement of the people who've died and the people who are going to die. And so I'm just so, God, I'm thankful. I was like, thank God. And man, if that makes me a neo-lib, so be it, baby.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough winter. We are going to be lucky if between now and inauguration, if we only lose 50,000 more Americans, I will consider us to have been lucky. We're seeing some reactions from the audience about the people who are on the list. Sarah Grace on Twitch says Abdul El-Sayed would have been really good to see on this. I agree, but Abdul also tweeted about the list and said he's worked with many of these people and he fully supports the people who are on the list. So that is good. I'm Cullen in the super chat says, what? No My Pillow guy? Yeah, that was a missed opportunity. He really should have had someone who sells pillows via commercials. But anyway. So this is the president-elect Joe Biden, who is going to be talking about the pandemic in this video. Now, you've seen a lot of the president talking about the pandemic. I think you're gonna notice a little bit of a difference in this.
As I said on Saturday, I'm humbled by the trust and confidence the American people have placed in me and in Vice President-elect Harris. And we're ready to get to work addressing the needs of the American people. Today, that work begins. It starts with doing everything possible to get the COVID-19 under control so that we can reopen our businesses safely and sustainably, resume our lives, put this pandemic behind us.
So he wants to actually get the pandemic under control, which is a radical shift of policy from what's been going on right now, which is they're just not doing anything. They don't care, they don't meet, there's no strategy, there's no testing and tracing, there's nothing. There's golfing and maybe at some point we'll have a vaccine. That is all Donald Trump and his administration is giving us. So it is good to have Joe Biden, a guy who takes medical issues seriously, although not necessarily to the extent that he would support Medicare for all, but we're gonna push him on that, and actually cares to stop people from getting sick and dying from COVID.
Yeah, this is the task. I mean, it is going to be a long road. We will have so much to talk about with the Biden administration, the ways that we need to push him. But those first 100 days also involve getting coronavirus under control, you know, and it also involves spending some money on that. It also involves listening to experts, and it's going to involve even more sacrifice. And I hope that, I just know that it will bring us together as a little bit more as a nation. It's a call to action. We've needed that. I mean, I think we're all in this moment where we don't even feel comfortable talking to our family, friends, being close to anybody. And it's like, well, if we have someone at the helm, if we have just some, if the adults can be back in the room, then it trickles down, all right? And these bros in Florida and over here in Huntington Beach, we'll put a stupid mask over their stupid effing faces.
Hopefully. I mean, that is one of the radical things that Joe Biden said. Brace yourself, earmuffs on the kids. He said at that press conference, I implore you to wear a mask. A mask is not a political statement.
Wow, crazy.
But that's better than anything Trump has said during the entire pandemic. Yes. Wear a mask, it's not political. He also said this, we will listen to the science. That's it, that's really all it takes. A little bit of effort, actually caring. That is gonna be a big change. And I have been waiting for it for quite a while. So
we believe the earth is round.
You mad man.
How dare you? The earth is dead exactly. And it voted.
He's gonna hold up a picture of the earth. So you'll be shocked to find out that more people in the White House have COVID. I know, they seem to be taking it so seriously. But yes, multiple White House staffers have tested positive for COVID-19 as a new round of aides became infected with the virus. An official familiar with the matter confirmed the positive test results to The Hill, although they did not immediately clarify exactly how many staffers had tested positive. CNN reported that two staffers had tested positive. We know that Mark Meadows is one of them. We'll have a little bit more on that in a second. But also Ben Carson, as of just this morning, had tested positive for COVID-19. He's apparently, according to his deputy chief of staff, he's in good spirits and feels fortunate to have access to effective therapeutics, which of course he's in the administration. He has the Dr. Johnny Bananas monkey meds. He is going to be okay. If he has to go to, you know, Walter Reed and get a team of 10 doctors and Dr. House will be there, he'll have it. The rest of us again will not, but at least Ben Carson's going to be okay, and probably Mark Meadows too. Although it just remains to be seen how many of them have gotten it, because again, they're having big parties. You saw it with Trump's speech on election night. They don't care. And the rounds of COVID that have swept through them have not gotten them to learn or to care anymore.
But okay, I did watch SNL this weekend and I thought Dave Chappelle's monologue was great. And he did bring up a point. He didn't really hammer it home in the way that I think he meant it, but which was Herman Cain died. Herman Cain is the only black man part of the Trump cohort to date who died. Everyone else has survived. So Ben Carson is African-American. Is he gonna get the same therapeutics, or is Dr. Monkey Mez just racist as F? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's a good question.
Like, I mean, it's you know, it is telling, like the only person who died was Herman Cain. Like, that's awful. Tweeting behind Chris beyond Christie the survived. Grave. What?
Chris Christie survived.
Donald
Trump, who's a million years old and has obvious pre-existing conditions, survived and seems okay now. But Herman Cain died.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it, of course, it took the president actually getting it for them to even get access to it or care about the surrogates who were doing all this work for him. I mean, think about the people who were working those events, you know, Secret Service, you know, I don't know how they're doing.
Yeah.
But
we don't know.
Oh, Ben Carson, but he's a doctor, though. So he should know, right?
You would hope. And we'll see. Apparently he's feeling good right now, but we also know that that does not mean that in 2 weeks he won't feel really, really bad. And it turns out that when you look around the country, a lot of people do, because I want to show you the COVID Tracking Project report for yesterday. So this is for Sunday. So Sunday, if you don't know, a lot of states don't report. So they tend to be much lower numbers than you'll get in the next few days. They had 103,000 cases on a Sunday, 57,000 people hospitalized, a death toll of 462. I hope that I am wrong, but looking at that, I know I've been tracking the COVID Tracking Project for this entire pandemic. The jump from Sunday to Tuesday can blow your mind. And so if that's what it looks like on a Sunday, I am very worried about what Tuesday is gonna look like. We've already hit the upper 120s in cases. Do we break 150,000 this week? I hope not. Do we break 1500 deaths again? I hope not. But these are the numbers that show that we're on that path to the dark winter that Francesca has been talking about.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I think we really need to like push back on just how crass the right wing media has been about this, because they'll like, well, the only 462 people died. 462 people died. All right. That's a lot of people. That's people's family members. Okay. Yeah. And we all know that deaths follow cases. And the more cases there are, the more spread there is. Why is there this much spread this far into this pandemic? right? We clearly don't have testing. We don't have masks. Where were you? Have you been issued a mask? I'd like a mask from the government, please. I really would. Mm-hmm. The only people who I've saw handing out any kind of information or masks in my neighborhood were Scientologists. So really? Thank you, Xenu. Yes, and I do expect to be the next Hollywood starlet. And you are a Thetan, John. So I'm going to have to. I'm gonna have to get rid of you somehow.
I'm an atheist. I worship Thetan. Anyway, we didn't get the masks. Oh, I've avoided
it's
taking
real.
The test. I had to go on Etsy to buy my Marauders map mask. yeah, it would be nice if they sent masks to everyone. We could use it. You know what we do have, though? A little bit of good news on the pandemic. Apparently, a vaccine is in sight, maybe. Announcement of the first interim results in large-scale trials for Pfizer-BioNTech's candidate is apparently 90% effective, according to the manufacturers. A little grain of salt there. There are so far no safety concerns around the vaccine. The two companies say there have been no serious side effects. I'll want to see some documentation on that. The high percentage of those protected makes the findings especially compelling. Regulators have said that they would approve a vaccine that was just 50% effective, and they're expecting that this is going to be about 90% effective. So, assuming that all of this is true, and we don't need to assume that all of this is true, hopefully that task force will look into this before it's distributed. This does look like some good news, especially considering that supposedly it will be made available to all Americans for free.
Yeah, and I would say that this is the one thing that I truly hope Trump does before he leaves. Or is dragged out, I'm sorry. Or before there's like a, a special Marine force that rappels down into the White House and then Trump throws Melania in front of him like, no, take her, take Eric, take Tiffany, you know, and then they just keep on going down the line. Anyway. The point is, the one that didn't happen. The point is I really hope that this is the thing that he tries to stake claim over, and then fine, have it, have the vaccine, but please admit and say that a vaccine will be effective. Like, you could have that because it's more important that you believe in vaccines for your anti-vax nut job base than it is for anyone else to claim ownership over that. Than it is for Democrats or Biden or whomever. I don't care because it is not political once again. Take it, make your whole family take it, make your whole base take it. And can we please just, all start believing in science together?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to go to the mall at some point, or the gym. That would be great. There's almost nothing left of me, America. Wear a mask. But it's funny that you use the term claim ownership. Because they did, following this news, Donald Trump tweeted that the vaccine was apparently effective. That's fine. Mike Pence said, huzzah to Project Warp Speed for giving us this vaccine. And then the company was like, no, we're not a part of that. What are you talking about? We literally didn't get any money from you, apparently. So, oops. I guess that press conference is going to be Mike Pence. At the Waldorf Astoria, Tool and Die. And you can go and you can watch more information about Project Warp Speed. But anyway, no. So we'll have to see. The vaccine could still be literally months at the minimum away, let alone the time for distribution and everything. So this is good news. We should be happy as a result of this. But this does not mean that the pandemic is done in a month. And my prediction for what's going to happen going forward, I don't think Donald Trump is going to do literally anything. Like, I don't think he's going to try to expedite this or whatever. I think what you are going to see develop as we get closer to Joe Biden being sworn in is going to be a very complicated two-step dance for Republicans, where they will switch over to pretending to care a great deal about the virus and about the death toll. They will begin to talk about that. They will sound like we were and are, but they will fight literally any effort to fight the virus. Fox News is going to be anti-lockdown, anti-mask central, which they've been doing already, but they're going to continue that. They are going to try to stop Biden in every way from doing anything to get this under control while complaining about the continuing death toll all the while. That would be my prediction. I don't think it's a particularly bold one.
No, you're absolutely right. Sadly, it will continue. They'll call it socialism. They'll call any attempt to trace people and contact trace. They'll call that, you know, Big Brother China, whatever. And again, I also think it's a space for progressives. I mean, this is a thing. I think people on the left were obviously rightfully concerned about privacy rights. You know, we in the wake of everything that we know about this government. But I do think that contact tracing is one of those things that is important. It absolutely is okay to okay that on your phone. It's okay to you know, for having your county contact you if you've been in touch with anyone. Let's try to depoliticize this. It has worked for other countries. We should let that part of the security state work while we simultaneously make other parts, you know, not work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So it has been difficult for some of Trump's followers to accept that he has apparently lost in his reelection bid. It has been tougher for some than others. Take a look at the reaction from Kenneth Copeland in this video.
The media said what? The media said Joe Biden's president. Ha 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 ha.
In the words of John Oliver, cool. Yeah, that's what he should have done. And then they zoom out and the audience is empty. But there was a full crowd of people who were like, yeah. He was not alone in that. How is he not alone in that, Francesca?
I mean, first of all, like, the pussy hatted, like, you know, scream after Trump won, you know, that the right wing memed, like, that's got nothing on this kind of meltdown that we're seeing. Like, this fool who straight up looks like Jigsaw from the Saw series, let's be real.
Yes.
He is so Jigsaw, it is scary, just missing the little rouge. That's what it is. It's rouge.
And the bicycle.
Right? He's just like, but he's not gonna stop laughing until he figures out how he gets his money out of this church and moves to the Bahamas quickly, you know? Like, he's like in his mind, he's like, when I stop laughing, I'll have a plan for what I do with this money guzzling shell company of a church that I've set up under the Trump administration and that's run free. Like, it's beautiful. This is what everyone on the right is doing. And yeah, from Paula White trying to conjure up a victory to this. These are Christian grifters, there are religious grifters, and they all will also need to go back and crawl into their, you know, whatever hole that they came out of.
Yeah, I know, you know, like a Ben Shapiro and stuff, they probably look at that and think, oh, that guy's losing it. No, you're all losing it. You're just losing it in a way that your audience wants to lose it. Ben Shapiro's audience probably wants to see him pretend that he always knew this was going to come or something. You know, and the Kenneth Copeland people want him to lose it like a maniac. I know that he is not representative of anything other than his church necessarily. He's certainly not representative even of Christianity, let alone religious people generally, but you gotta give it to them and to him. He really activated challenge mode, because the idea that you're gonna become a very popular, influential priest while looking literally like a demon that is about to burst out of a skin sack,
yep,
that seems tough, but he's made a life of it. I don't believe fundamentally in evil as a spiritual force, but if it exists, that's definitely what it looks like. He is the most evil looking person I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, evil's got filler, dude. Evil has filler. Oh. It has a lot of filler, and it's almost like, John, it's almost like religion is also a grift.
It's almost like that. And the fear that I have is that in the same way that Fox is gonna convince their audience to never accept that Biden won, and you know, all of the online right grifters are gonna do the same, he's going to do that, and other mega church preachers are going to do it to their congregations. And that is going to add up to millions and millions of Americans that believe that this fairly substantial loss, electorally and in terms of the popular vote, doesn't count for anything, and they don't have to learn. And it's totally cool for the Republican Party to be basically just about tax cuts and white supremacy going forward. And that is a bigger issue than Kenneth Copeland by himself, perhaps. Okay, we're about to launch into Donald Trump's final 60 days or so of being a president. And just because he lost doesn't mean that he can't still get a lot done and do a lot of damage. Indeed, it might free him up to do that damage with even less fear of consequences than normal. So we decided that Francesca and I are gonna do a little top 10 list of the scariest possible lame duck actions that Donald Trump could take before inauguration. So we've each got five. Francesca, would you like to give your first?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know that I have jokingly asked for this over the last few months, but I am afraid he will show us his undies. I just want to be real. I'm afraid no. That something's gonna happen. There's gonna be a D pick. There's gonna be an undies pick. People are saying to put on his big boy pants and concede. I'm afraid I will get what I wished for. So yes, that is the first thing I'm afraid of, that we will actually see his undies.
You were one syllable into that, and I knew exactly where we were going, and I already hated it. I saw the twinkle in your eye, and it could only mean one thing. Look, I'm a little bit worried about that too, but can we acknowledge another small miracle that Donald Trump, a guy that is enamored with himself beyond any rationality, that definitely wants to sleep with literally anyone. Isn't it a nice thing that we don't have a pick? You'd think you would. He's always on his phone. He thinks he's awesome and he wants to get with everyone. That's usually a recipe for dick pic. But thankfully, we don't have one.
Yes. That's how you know it's disgusting, because if it were nice, we would all be treated to it without consent. So that's how you know
it's possible that maybe, or every phone that it's opened up on cracks, so it can't be shared. Anyway.
Exactly.
Good number five. I'm worried about that. My number five is going to be a little bit different. It is going to be the potential for Donald Trump to create international chaos. A lot of these are going to be focused on the domestic situation, but we know that he wants a war with Iran. So that's a fear. Increased drone strikes and things like that. Trying to make, you know, some good news by taking out some sort of, you know, equivalent of a Qasem Soleimani or something like that. Weapons sales that he gets a percentage on, releasing confidential information just to create chaos or to benefit his friends internationally or, you know, for money. I don't know. I have this as number five because I think it is a low chance that these things will happen. I think that his desire for war with Iran was a thing that he thought could benefit him politically. I think that if it's on his way out, there's less reason to do those things. But he does have sort of single-handed control over quite a bit of this. And if he wanted to do something to feel powerful, to feel like he's still in charge, he could do that. And we will just note that he just fired Esper. So he's clearly thinking about national security and all of that. So my fear is creating some sort of international chaos.
Yeah. I mean, also with Bibi Netanyahu in your ear, that doesn't help, because Bibi's like, just one bomb, just one bomb to Iran, please, please, come on. Just a little, look, it's gonna foment the Christian apocalypse. Jesus is coming back, you just gotta bomb Iran, yeah, do it. So yes, I'm super scared of that. If that could be my number four, that is my number four, some kind of first strike against probably Iran, or maybe even North Korea, who knows?
No, they're buddies. They've written letters. We have documented proof. Okay, that's your number four?
Yeah.
Okay, my number four is going to be that, but basically here. So that is going to, I think I really worry about this. I do. So far, so good, I guess. But my fear is that he's going to incite one of a few things. The worst, obviously, would be widespread violence, followed close second, targeted specific violence. So he gets a few of his, you know, white supremacist, domestic terrorist supporters to do something crazy. But I think that even if that stuff doesn't happen, and so far we've been lucky, the plots have been foiled, like in Philadelphia and stuff like that. The trying to instill a fundamental, even stronger than usual opposition to democracy among his fans, that is going to be the ungift that keeps on ungifting going forward. We already know that Republicans don't think that democracy actually winning the vote is their path to power. I think they are going to have that locked in even more durably as a result of Donald Trump and the rest of the White House waging this campaign to delegitimize Joe Biden in advance of him being sworn in. Remember, look, Hillary Clinton has never and will never get over Donald Trump becoming president, and I sort of get it, but she went to his inauguration. She gave a speech the next day after the election conceding. We're not getting anything like that, and I fear that that will create a lasting, durable opposition to democracy amongst his followers.
Oh yeah, that's a given. That absolutely will happen. And there's part of me that's kind of happy about that because I think a lot of the media is like, well, please, you gotta go to the inauguration. You know, that way we can normalize everything that's just happened before us. And it's like, no, he will not go, and we should not normalize this fascist because that means we will be ripe, and we are ripe for another fascist taking over.
So,
I'm super concerned about that too. My number three, though, if we're going to three, right? Three, I could do it. Look, if he can't nuke himself, he can sell the codes. Sell them codes, sell them codes. This guy is millions and millions of dollars in debt. I think selling state secrets will be perfect at this point, okay? We swap a little state secrets, sell them to Russia, sell them to China. You know, there's just so many Saudi Arabia. There's so many opportunities to make money with American secrets right now, whatever they are. I don't know. Like, are they gonna be on eBay? Are the UFO tapes gonna be for sale on eBay? Because if so, let's get over there. I'm a very good bidder. But yeah, I am worried that there's going to be some sort of like, give me asylum and I will give you your file type thing when it comes to foreign powers.
Okay, I fear what I would argue is a subtler version of that.
Okay.
So I think like there are things he could do via executive order or that hypothetically could pass as legislation that would benefit certain countries that he could on the back end get a benefit off of. Like sure, declassifying crazy secrets, totally possible. But there's also things that presidents do in their final days that benefit other countries. He could totally do that sort of thing to personally benefit himself. So yeah, I am worried about that too. But my number three is going to be, what if he just does nothing? What if it's just golf and total landscaping, you know, press conferences? That is good 99 times out of 100. In 99 issues out of 100, that would be good. Can't wait. It's one of the reasons I'm engaging so much in his legal challenges. I want him to be focused on those rather than on doing damage to the environment, the economy, and all sorts of stuff like that. But on COVID, the cost is just too damn high. And him doing nothing is unfortunately what we're probably going to get.
Yeah.
But that is going to kill about a Vietnam War worth of Americans between now and when he finally gets his ass booted out of the White House. And that is horrifying. Just his inaction could be a tragedy on top of tragedy.
Yeah, and especially when it comes to stimulus money and him probably denying, and Republicans probably not going to be passing any kind of, you know, PPP loans or stimulus money or any kind of assistance or extra unemployment benefits, any kind of assistance. Every single day, an actual small business is going under. Every single day, people are dying. I mean, it's just like, yeah. We can't take much more of this. We truly cannot. And Republicans are going to continue that we spiral down. And once again, it's a perfect setup. We are in a very volatile situation where we are setting ourselves up for a future where fascism will continue to make sense to folks because they're so at their wits' end that they just want somebody to get something done. And Republicans love to not do anything and then point to their inactivity as reason why oligarchy should only exist more, corporations should run everything, and we should have a strong man calling the shots. So, it's a set them up, you knock them down strategy, and I totally agree with you. That's going to continue. But my number two, I think he's going to bug the White House. He's going to bug. He's going to do what he thought Obama did and what he claimed. He's just going to be like, they will put microwaves in every room. And you know, microwaves are great buggers. It's like, no, they're not. But he's gonna do something. Like, is there a sweep of the White House that the incoming president does? I'm assuming not. But that's a norm. That's a norm. Yeah, why would there be a sweep?
Give me some norms. yeah, I mean, look, that could be one of the things he sells. Like, he like live webcam access to every room in the White House. He sells on OnlyFans.
Yes,
that is possible. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm not sure, but I like the way you're thinking outside of the box or outside of reason. Okay, so I'm totally joking. My number two is going to be up here. It's high ranked because I think it's very likely to happen. Whether it's the most damaging, you can decide for yourself, but that is going to be some combination of destroying evidence and pardons, whether for himself or for others, commutations of sentences. The reason this is so likely is because literally every president does this, whether for good or for ill. You know, Chelsea Manning in the final days of the Obama administration, obviously, as well as many other people. But then you also have, like, you know, Bill Clinton, like, very opportunistically providing pardons for the people that he knew. And so, like, if Clinton is doing it, Trump is gonna pardon everybody. He's gonna be selling it for $100.
Who's it gonna be? I know.
What's that? Who?
You got a call on me.
Who? Oh, Francesca in the back.
Thank you. Ghislaine Maxwell.
Oh no. It will be.
No. She's a very wonderful woman. She did nothing wrong. And she's gotta be out of prison so we can more easily murder her. What?
They'd still, QAnon would find a way. They'd be okay with that. They would find a way.
They don't care about Epstein. They totally don't care about Epstein. It's about the it's about the pizza parlor and the cheese pizza.
Maybe. The cheese pizza. Yeah, so I would be very worried about that. But you can do preemptive pardons. I think he's gonna do it. He could do it for himself. He could do it for his whole family. He could do it for literally everything. I think he is going to find that to be a very appetizing final action.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Destroying evidence for sure. Man, the paper shredders that they're gonna have to be Amazon primed over to the White House. Be a whole team of paper shredders. There's gonna be the task rabbits in DC are gonna be just crushing it in the final days of the Trump administration. Okay, number one, stealing as much as possible. Just, this is a supermarket sweep of the federal government. All right, we're talking the China, the silverware. Okay, Wilbur Ross is going to be scraping off the gold molding of the Chamber of Commerce. He's gonna be, this is worth something. But no, but truly they will find a way
to steal as much as possible, and it will be right. You never gave me a chance. I never was a day in my life.
So this, and obviously not just physically, but there'll be whatever act legislation they can pass, whatever sort of empty fund, whatever office space decimal point they can set up and funnel to their own personal bank accounts. Look, Trump is not the only one in debt. Trump is not the only goon who's gonna owe money and who has made false promises and who hasn't delivered on his debtors in 4 years of, you know how many grifters have taken refuge in the Trump administration? So they will absolutely be continuing to do that. They're going to be trying to set up a cushion, a landing pad for themselves once they're out of there. And that totally involves robbing the American people blind more so than they've already been doing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. If you like go on eBay and you see like the top of the Washington Monument, you'll know. You'll know. It's just the top. It's good for yards, you know? Anyway, yeah, that would be my fear. And look, there's stuff theoretically by executive order. They could, you know, make another pool of money available for small business relief, but it technically goes to all their buddies and everything. So yeah, definitely gonna have to watch out for that. Someone in the chat said, hey, wait, where'd Alaska go? Yeah, they're just gonna be like the old kings. They're just gonna give states to people. Anyway, we'll see. Okay, my number one is less fun, but I think pretty likely. I mean, it's ongoing right now. And that would be more judges, more justices. Every justice must go. You know, like the manager is out of the building. We've lost our lease. Yes. We got to get every one of these. And so Mitch McConnell already this week has started off. He's pushing to pack as many more judges as possible. And so that's happening. The question is, will we get another justice in the lame duck? And I think it's number one because that would be the most damaging, but it's not likely. I mean, Breyer's 82, he served for 26 years. In theory, he could retire. Clarence Thomas is 72, and they definitely don't want that seat to eventually go to a Democratic president. He's been there for 29 years, but he's 72. Alito is 70. There are three men on the court that are quite old that could, in theory, retire. I'm not saying that these are likely. I don't think it's likely,
God,
but Breyer's 82. Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
like
he retired. He fell in the shower. He got coronavirus. Look, all I'm saying is, if you were a Supreme Court justice, watch your back, bro. There are cruel MFers out there in this Trump administration. If you don't retire, they'll make you retire. I would not put that past any Republican at this point. Meanwhile, Clarence Thomas is just holding ceremonies without a mask, you know, like he's not an at-risk group. You're so right. I mean, we have him laughing because we've already lost so much. Like, we all know just how much of a coup the Supreme Court has been for the entire right wing. So again, this whole thing, it's not just bittersweet. I mean, it is. I use the analogy, it's like winning at a slot machine, but having to receive the coins through an enema. Like, that is the moment that we're in right now. We will take those coins, but it's gonna hurt. And we've lost a lot of ground, but we're gonna need the coins. So Biden it is, and we don't have the Senate yet, and we lost seats in the House. And we might have a, you know, 6-3 or God 7-2, whatever it's gonna be, you know, extremist Supreme Court.
Totally, totally. And you're right, Georgia's the next step, and we will be turning to that on tomorrow's show. But Francesca, thank you so much for humoring me and for providing a bit of much needed and I would say much earned for America levity and you know, context on what's been going on. Really do appreciate you.
Hail Biden.
Hail Biden. Where can people see more of your work?
Oh, follow me at Franny Fio on Instagram and Twitter, and listen to or watch the Bituation Room podcast on my YouTube channel, also Franny Fio. We had Ben Dixon and Ida Rodriguez last night. So good, such a good episode.
Awesome.
And yes, of course, John's been on, and I hope to have him on again soon.
Thank you. Okay, have a good one, Franny.
Take good care.
So through the course of the lead up to the election, I had multiple conversations with the guest that is about to join us about Joe Biden and what he can and should do to turn out the Latino vote. And this guest gave amazing advice to him. And we'd been wondering, how is it gonna work out? Well, now we have the results, so we can start to do our postmortem. Very excited to be joined once again on the show by former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders in both 2020 and 2016, as well as the author of Teal Bernie, the inside story of how Bernie Sanders brought Latinos into the political revolution. Chuck Rocha, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Good to be here.
Very glad to have you here. So like I said in the intro, you did everything you can to give some advice to Joe Biden. So we don't have all the final numbers yet, but right, based off of what you've seen, what do you think went right? What went wrong? What went wrong? Let's dive into it.
Well, first of all, I think that you've got to take a couple states and you got to set them over to the side, because there was a lot of difference in the ways that the Latino vote came out based off of demographics and state by state. Let's start with this crazy state called Florida. Almost, I would like to just saw it off and set it out there in the ocean by Puerto Rico and let it just sit there for a little bit, but we can't. We can't ignore it. It happened. Joe Biden dramatically underperformed in Miami-Dade, but overall, everybody underperformed. If you're just listening to the press on election night, you would think that Joe Biden lost the Latino vote, when in fact, he won the Latino vote in every state. Did he win it in Florida by enough? No, but let's just look at Florida and dive into Miami-Dade. If Joe Biden gets the same amount of vote as Hillary Clinton, the same percentages, he still loses the state of Florida. You may ask why? Not because of Latinos, but because of white people. Joe Biden underperformed with older white people and college educated women and college educated men in Florida, which cost him the whole state. There's a lot more white people in Florida, believe it or not, than there are Latinos. So could he have done better in Miami-Dade? Yes, he could have. Did he do really well in Orlando with Puerto Ricans like we talked about? Yes, he did. But there's a glaring problem that we all need to deal with in Miami and have a conversation and a deep dive after all the numbers have come in. So let's talk about the rest of the country. Let's talk about Arizona, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And you know what delivered the presidency for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris? Black voters and brown voters. Latinos in Arizona voted for Joe Biden almost 70%. And they were such a huge part of the overall electorate. Single-handedly, Latinos and groups on the ground in our super PAC, Nuestro PAC, delivered that state where I spent $3.9 million. On election day in Nevada, in Las Vegas, 25% of election day voters in Nevada were Latino. And let's go to the Northeast. Michigan, over 150,000 Latinos showed up. Half of those had never voted before. And in Pennsylvania, almost 300,000 Latinos, and half of them had never voted before. So the Latino vote and then the African-American vote in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Detroit delivered this election to Joe Biden, while white people, again, were in love with Donald Trump and voted for him in big numbers.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my biggest issues with the white community these days. And that's gonna be a problem going forward. So that's interesting. I didn't know exactly how you would feel coming out of this. But I think that you're totally right to point out that the turnout is up. You know, this was a very high turnout election, which is certainly a good thing. His percentages might not have been exactly what we might have hoped in some of these communities. But the points you made about Florida, I found very interesting. I've been wondering what data we had on the sort of the new to Florida Puerto Rican vote. And so, but it is interesting that all of that wasn't enough to swamp the white vote going so thoroughly against him in Miami, that even all of these new people coming in wasn't enough to overwhelm that white vote there in the Miami area. Did you expect that it might?
I thought that it could. There's a potential there. We've learned some lessons that we can't not just let Republican Cubans run away with the messaging in South Florida, because it affects other immigrant Latino communities in Florida that are not Cuban. So go down there, face it, let's have a debate, get on those radio programs, those YouTube shows, and kind of go after them. That also dovetails into all of this misinformation that was in Spanish in Miami, led up by the Republicans, led by Donald Trump, that was really giving people a lot of lies that weren't really combated because it was in Spanish, so people weren't paying attention to that. But while I have you, I've given this rosy picture. Let's talk about a few things that didn't go right. A few things that didn't go right is there was exponentially more spending to white persuadable voters, and they continue to underperform. While you had black and brown voters who delivered the election for Joe Biden, still dramatically underfunded. Only 2% of all of the independent expenditure money went to black or or brown led super PACs. The top 15 super PACs in America were led by white men and white women. We must address diversity. If you really think black women are the backbone of this party, if you really believe in DACA and felon rights and all the things that you say you care about, we need to see reflectiveness, not only in Kamala Harris, but in who you're hiring. And then the second point of that, there was a dramatic underperformance amongst people of color and Latinos with these Senate races and these House races. Mm. We're going to end up losing House races where Latinos make up over 30% of the total population, and half of all the people that will lose races are members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. We need to go look at that and find out why there wasn't a Latino program run in these congressional races.
Yeah, it certainly seems like even to the limited extent that money and time and resources and attention was put to the community, it was put to the community specifically for the benefit of Joe Biden. That's rather it. Than a broader, you know, a broader set of attention that could have helped those down ballot tickets, as well as building the party for the future when Joe Biden won't be the candidate. Like, more spending in Georgia now seems like even would have been even better, considering we're about to launch into two, you know, runoff elections within a month and a half.
Look, you had all this money that flew into there late, right? So all of this Latino money that went through these other PACs was there in the last 2 weeks. It was over by then, right? That money is not efficiently spent. If you want to spend smart money, you start spending money in July, like we did Nuestro PAC and Joe Biden did in Arizona in July. That's how you build a long-term multi-layered program that actually gets Latinos engaged and persuaded to vote for you. Not showing up in the last 10 days buying $10 million of Spanish TV. That's not going to move our community who'd already been talked out of voting for somebody because of what they were hearing from their brother-in-law.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there has to be an inoculation against the disinformation that's going to come through the, you can't come in at the last minute and try to get like a few people who think that Joe Biden is a Satanist who eats children. It's too late at that point, like, to get through just with a Spanish language ad, I would imagine. In the Rio Grande Valley, it looks like Trump got between 41% to 47% of the Hispanic vote, which is higher on average than some other areas. As you started off our segment, you said, this is not one community. This is not one type of people. These are many communities that differentiate across multiple different demographic groups. So why in that area do you think he was as successful as he was, increasing his vote share from 2016?
Let's talk about a few things. That only represents 15% of the overall Latino population in Texas. So let's set that there so you know that these are very rural counties. Not a lot of Latinos live there. They are 90% Latino for sure. But if you look at the same precincts in Dallas-Fort Worth, in South Oak Cliff, that's actually in Dallas, 91% Latinos in this precinct I looked at. Joe Biden got 75% of the vote in that 90% precinct, while dramatically underperforming in the Valley, in the same type of precinct, in the same state, with the same type of Latinos, which they're almost all Mexicans. What we have to realize is nobody's talking to these Latinos in the Valley and these rural areas. At least in Dallas and Houston, in the precincts that I dug into, they're probably getting information from a strong Democratic Party or a strong social progressive movement that's there. It could be any of these orgs, Move On, Indivisible. A lot of the information was going into those communities because they were so dense. Because they were dense, you can walk them. And because you can walk them and call them, you get more information. Then when you get to the Valley, it's so sparse and people are more spread out. And let's be clear, a lot of them talk like I do. They wear a cowboy hat every day. They drive a truck. They are machismo, which I am not, but they are. They like Donald Trump, and they were looking for somebody to give them an alternative narrative, and they never really did. So with that set up, the perfect storm. And let me add in one more little nuance, is Texas for the first time did away with straight party voting, where those Latinos in the Valley had been taught since the day they could vote, go in and check Democrat and walk out. For the first time in the history, that was not, you weren't able to do that in Texas. And I think that did have some effect.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting. And I have not heard many people talk about that specific to Texas. So really fast, last question. We're starting to see some of Joe Biden, now President-elect Joe Biden's actions. He announced the COVID task force. So, you know, a lot of people who in the primary, people like me who supported people like, you know, Bernie Sanders and more left candidates, we wanna see what is he gonna do. Who is he going to put in positions of power? What signs is he going to send to us that he is not going to spend the next couple of years futilely trying to work with Mitch McConnell, a guy who hates his guts? So in terms of what would you like to see out of Joe Biden that shows that he actually is going to care about this community or these communities going forward, that it's not going to be, oh, thanks for the election, now we're moving on, we don't care anymore?
Well, first of all, don't talk to me about policy, all of you lefties out there like me thinking Joe Biden's going to be writing legislation. Let's talk about what Joe Biden can control that could be amazingly good for progressives and for Latinos and for working class people like me. There's two things that are very much in his control: who he picks to be in his cabinet and the executive orders that he commits to sign immediately. So first, I want to see some progressives in a cabinet. I'd love to see Bernie Sanders be the Secretary of Labor. I'd love to see Elizabeth Warren in the cabinet. I'd love to see multicultural, multiracial people that are progressive like me in the cabinet. I want to see this reflectiveness in my government, A. B, do the easy things. Hat tip to those voters who put you in office, these black and brown voters. Let's put DACA back in right away. Let's put TPS in right away. Let's shut down all these private prisons on the border where these babies and mothers have been separated and get that done now. Let's figure out exactly how to reunite these 545 babies with their mothers immediately. And you get up on your soapbox and you talk about, we are making this a priority and we're gonna make this happen. You couple that along with him trying to do more on healthcare, more on the environment, then you are kind of disengaging a progressive community who is rabid to go after him because they automatically think, because he puts Republicans in his cabinet, that he's going to run away from progressives. It's up to us to force this administration and more so the Congress to be accountable. And that work starts now.
Ton of great advice. And there's really no excuse to do virtually every one of those things. You don't need legislation. Those could be executive orders. They could be day one. You could be prepping now. So Joe Biden, if you're listening, or someone from your team, Chuck Rocha has given you the pathway forward. The question is, will you walk it? In any event, Chuck Rocha, I always appreciate you making time to come on the show. I really appreciate your perspective and your experience. Thank you once again, and look forward to seeing what you get up to as we go forward.
Let's roll on.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.